Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Howard Beckett, Sports Illustrated today, wrote a story. Does the NBA have a cursing problem? You have to read it. It's hilarious. But before we get to that, Howard, do you think it's true what Charles Barkley said, that the MVP thing was distracting Joel Embiid last night, and that's why he did not show up for my 76ers?
So, good afternoon, guys. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thanks.
It's funny, in the moment, I thought, that feels like a stretch to me. And I always think of it in terms of, like, you know, if it's Shaq, of course, you know, Shaq gets snubbed. Shaq wants to go out and crush people, kill them, and show them that they were wrong. And I think I'm more used to the idea that a player of that level of ability and dominance and greatness, that is the default reaction, is to go prove why we're all dumb for not giving it to you. I'm going to go show you all one more time, if you weren't convinced before. So the idea that he was distracted by it, that it was so disturbing to him that he couldn't perform, feels like a stretch to me. That said, I was recording my podcast earlier today, the Crossover Podcast, which will run on Friday. But my guest today was Robert Horry, and I asked Rob, who of course has, you know, won seven championships and been in a lot of finals. He actually thought that was plausible. Like, he thought that was part of it. And I said, well, Joel Embiid has a broken face and a hand injury that's pretty serious, and has, you know, just gotten over a concussion. I would have thought maybe it was more of those things. And you know, Robert Horry said, yeah, I'm sure all that had to roll too. Maybe it's everything. But he actually felt like that's what he saw last night, and the way that Embiid played was that it was somehow his head wasn't in the right space. That's mind reading, obviously, for any of us, for Charles, for Rob, for any of us. But I, you know, when players are saying it and former players are saying it, I have to think that there's something potentially to it. But, you know, if he were fully healthy, if he weren't getting over a concussion, if this weren't, you know, he was off for however many days before he had to play two games in a short time, could be fatigue. There's so many other things that could be going on there. I hope it's not because he was so troubled by the MVP thing, because I don't think that would speak well of anybody as a competitor to lose your focus over something that, relatively speaking, is trivial, especially when you've got a, you know, bigger fish to fry, a championship to pursue that was more important than the MVP award.
Howard, I don't mean to put you on the spot here. Do you remember, did you vote in 2005 or 2006 for Steve Nash over Shaq? Because Shaq was complaining about it last night. I'm on Team Shaq here. I look back at the numbers. How is Steve Nash the MVP?
So I've been covering the league for 25 years, and I've been a voter for most of them, but I had a nine-year stretch where I was not a voter because I was working at the New York Times, which does not allow us to vote. So I get to take a free pass on everything from the 2005 awards through the 2012 awards, because that was a span of time where I was not a voter.
I'll tell you, Andrew Perloff, and apologies for my voice today, Howard. Perloff is very salty about the Jokic getting back-to-back MVPs. Very salty.
I voted for Giannis. I had Jokic second and Embiid third, which will sure not please you either. But yeah, I mean, the Jokic thing, it's interesting. And the last several years, I would say, in a way, the dam broke the year that Westbrook won MVP, because we had a very long stretch, a very long-standing precedent of MVPs coming from teams that were top three in their conference at minimum, and that won 50 games at minimum, or the equivalent in a shortened season, right?
Yep.
You know, lockout years, pandemic years. And Westbrook broke the mold by doing something that people were so in awe of statistically that they threw out that standard, and he won it having been on a 47-win team that finished sixth and had absolutely no shot of making a deep playoff run. I thought that was a mistake. I voted for James Harden that year. I had Westbrook third. And keeping consistent with my own view of what the MVP is and isn't, I voted for Giannis this year. And what Jokic did was fantastic. I mean, all three of those guys had very strong cases to make statistically, but I am a big believer in the – now it's basically all but three guys in 41 years. 41 years where – and by the way, of the three, one of them is Moses Malone 41 years ago, who everybody else comes from teams that you can look at – forget the 50-win plateau, forget the you know, top three in the conference. They're at a, you look at them and you go, like, that is a team that matters. That's a team that can make a deep run. That's a team that can probably – or possibly at least win a championship. The Nuggets had no chance. And I know they only had a few wins less than Milwaukee and Philly, and that was an argument people made in Jokic's favor, to which I would say, yeah, but we know that the Bucks and Sixers had a chance, both of them, as we're still seeing, to make a deep run, and we knew that the Nuggets did not have that chance. And the MVP is not just an individual award. By historical precedent, by tradition, by all other perception, winning matters, winning at a high level matters. And so to me, it had to be Giannis, who I think had the best combination of not just individual dominance at both ends, by the way, but also was on a team that absolutely matters and could make a deep run and win another championship.
Howard Beck is our guest, Sports Illustrated senior NBA writer. The whole thing I took from that, Howard, is it's Westbrook's fault, which is basically kind of like the theme of 2021-2022 season. And with that, just going to transition to the Lakers for a second, because I'm sure you've read Jeannie Buss's sit down with Bill Plaschke. And, you know, my take on it was, if I'm a Laker fan, I'm not really feeling that great. She's obviously committed to the fans. She's loyal to the people around her, but it doesn't seem like anything is going to be changing here in the near future. What was your big takeaway from that sit down?
Yeah, Maggie, I mean, I basically, you know, thought the same. Great job by Plaschke with that interview, and credit to Jeannie for deciding to do it. I thought it was necessary, and as she herself, I think, kind of said or hinted at, maybe overdue. They, you know, the people need to hear from her. And it's great that she's coming out and saying, and as I think any team owner should, you know, take responsibility when things fall way short of expectations. And I credit her for being willing to talk about it and be available and being accountable. But where I would draw the line is, I think, where probably Laker fans would draw the line, which is, okay, but what are you going to do to fix things?
Right.
And firing Frank Vogel isn't going to fix anything. Running it back with Westbrook next season certainly isn't going to fix anything. But, you know, again, to Jeannie's credit, she's not making any proclamations about Westbrook's future, and she shouldn't. She should leave that to her basketball people. That's fine. I think if there's a ongoing concern here, it would be who she's entrusting as her basketball people. You know, I don't think that Rob Pelinka and that front office have done a bang-up job. That's not a controversial or you know, take of any sort. It's pretty clear. And, yes, they did win a championship 2 years ago. But, you know, everything that preceded that during this administration and everything that's followed it has been questionable at best. And I would just say this. If at a minimum, if you don't want to replace your front office, if these are the people that you still believe in and think are your trusted expertise, fine. Bring in somebody else, though, to assist. Somebody, they need another voice in there.
Yep.
The Lakers haven't done anything remotely creative in the last couple of years. They don't strike me as a team that really knows how to work their way out of a situation like they're in now, where they're capped out and they've got all these issues. They don't have draft assets or trade assets to work with. You need a really creative mind in there to try to figure out how to offload Westbrook without it costing you future assets. You need to you know, remake this whole roster again. And I think entrusting it to the same people who put you in this position without any other voices in the room. This is all I'm saying. Like, I never suggest firing anybody. I don't like doing that. But at a minimum, you need another voice, somebody who's got a different perspective and maybe some more creative view of how to maneuver the cap to get you out of the situation.
But Howard, could even the greatest GM in the world do anything with sort of the limitations there? And also, isn't this like sort of the deal with LeBron? You bring in LeBron, you're going to use a lot of resources to get him and to build a champion around him, and then those resources eventually get depleted. I feel like you could bring in anyone, and they're kind of pinned in a bad situation.
Yeah, I mean, listen, whether somebody, given where they are right now, could get them out of it, I'm not saying it would be easy, even for the most brilliant minds, but somebody like Sam Presti, who's really smart about, you know, leveraging what he has, about maximizing every asset, about turning this asset into five more assets, like, you need somebody like that. You need a really sharp, creative GM who knows how to get things done to even have any hope of fixing what they have there. In terms of the LeBron piece of it, listen, I know that this kind of theme evolved over the course of his Cleveland, his second Cleveland stint, that, oh yeah, you're this is what you get when you have LeBron. You have to, like, tear up everything. You have to, like, mortgage the future. That's any superstar you've got. You do everything possible to maximize them for the time that you have them. And if that means trading picks for players, of course you do that. That's not about LeBron. That's just smart management. That's like maximizing the present, because the future's not guaranteed, especially in a league where stars change teams so often. And so it's not on LeBron that they decided to trade their entire roster for Westbrook. And I know, again, LeBron was in favor of it. It doesn't matter. You're the GM and the team owner, by the way, are supposed to be the ones to say, you know what, I know you'd like to get this player or that player. We're not doing that. We're not making that deal. It doesn't make sense for us as a franchise. Sometimes you have to put your foot down. Franchises do it all the time. And they didn't have to make the Westbrook trade. It was that cost them a ton. The Anthony Davis deal cost them a ton. Remember, LeBron came in free agency, so he didn't cost them anything. But the Anthony Davis thing, Anthony Davis demanded a trade to one team, which meant that Anthony Davis had all the leverage in the world. The Lakers should have had all the leverage in the world over the Pelicans in that negotiation, and yet the Lakers gave up multiple picks, multiple good young players, Brandon Ingram, who's turned into an all-star, Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, and that, to me, is the overlooked piece in all of this. The Anthony Davis trade was the first part of where they really started to mortgage their future, when they should have been able to get him for much less, given that Anthony Davis was a walk-away free agent who demanded to go to only one team.
Yeah, and that was also clutch, you know, the agency that really maneuvered that too. And I would say in some ways kind of botched it, but ultimately got their client where he wanted to go, which was to the Lakers. Howard Beck is our guest, Sports Illustrated senior NBA writer. He's written this great piece about cursing in the NBA. Get to that in just one moment. Just one last one for you before we get to it, Howard, which is Sean Marks, the general manager of the Brooklyn Nets, was speaking today, kind of reiterating that you know, he wants guys who are going to be all in. Now, he said not just Kyrie Irving, but everybody. I got to be honest, I don't know how much Sean Marks's remarks have much merit or teeth, because he's also the person who said we weren't going to have any part-time players last year, and then the Nets reverted on that stance. So what makes me think that the Nets are actually interested in playing hardball with Kyrie Irving?
Yeah, this is one of the most fascinating situations in the NBA and for the offseason. You know, I've said this, I'm not the only one, but like here the Nets are with Kevin Durant, who's one of the greatest players we've ever seen. And they have, three stars, which, you know, in a super team in the NBA, that should be the formula for title contention, except that two of their three stars, the two guys who are not Kevin Durant, are two of the most unpredictable and unreliable stars in the NBA right now. And yeah, there's context to all of it, and we could talk about all that, but like the bottom line, it is where they are. They have Ben Simmons, who you can't necessarily trust to rely on, and they've got Kyrie Irving, who you can't trust to rely on. And Kyrie Irving could be a free agent if he decides to opt out. Ben Simmons is under contract for a few more years. I don't know that you can have both of them. If you're going to have any reliability or stability whatsoever, you can have one of those guys. You can't have them both, because that's way too much volatility, and we just saw that in action this season. So do they trade Ben Simmons? They're not talking about it that way today, but you never would tip your hand on that, even if you were. Do you really re-sign Kyrie Irving? Because if you can't replace him if he walks away. You're still going to be over the cap. And so as an asset management rule, you don't let him just walk away. But re-signing him, and especially re-signing him to a lot of money over a lot of years, could be pretty limiting for them, and a bad investment that could backfire very easily. I don't know where it goes. I just know that logically, to me, and I think Sean Marks is a really smart guy who's done some great things for that franchise in his time there, but I got to think that you have to decide to part with one or the other. keep Ben Simmons and ship out Kyrie, or, you know, maybe you ship him out in a sign-in trade if he goes to the free agency route, or if you're keeping him, move Ben Simmons. I just don't think you can go with both of those guys back, and especially considering how much cap room the two of them take up, it means that you are that much more limited in building out the rest of the roster.
Talking to Sports Illustrated's Howard Beck. Howard, your story today, does the NBA have a cursing problem about this new trend of players getting fined for profanity? Now, we don't have a dump button ready to go, Howard, to leave out some of the details you had in the story, but why is the NBA so concerned about foul language?
So, sometime in the last couple of years during the pandemic, league officials noticed that guys were swearing a little bit more freely in press conferences, which, by, you know, we're mostly on Zoom, right? They're not seeing the people they're talking to. There's nobody in the room. There's just a little, you know, web camera, whatever. That's it. And so everybody's guard was down. And what the league was noticing was that guys weren't just cursing more often in interviews. They were also, you know, the respect for the game rules were kind of eroding, like what guys were saying to each other or to the referees. Especially with empty arenas, more stuff was getting kicked into the stands because there was nobody sitting up there. And so the league decided they would have what they called a recentering of all of their decorum rules. And as part of the decorum rules, they were cracking down on respect for the game stuff, stuff going into the stands, you know, the way guys interact with refs. Oh, and by the way, please stop cursing when you're in front of the media. And they didn't label which words. They just said, stop the profane language. But the one that really bothers them, of course, is the F word. The other ones they don't like either. They would prefer that players not use any of them. But the one that will get you fined is variations of the F word. And maybe if you used a flurry of the other words. So they sent out a memo early in the season, and the crackdown ensued. Four guys, Julius Randle, Kevin Durant, Patrick Beverley, Rudy Gobert, all got fined this season for versions of using, various uses of the F word. And that's the most they've ever fined guys for, just for profanity. I don't mean profanity directed at a ref or profanity directed at a fan or anything like that. I mean profanity just simply used in the course of an interview. That is the most players who have ever been rung up in a single season for the offense. And It's interesting. This is the league clearly thinks it has a certain image it wants to project. As I say, they use the word decorum a lot. They just think it's proper decorum. I spoke to some experts on linguistics and for the story who basically said, this isn't worth doing. You're not protecting anybody. And these words are so much more accepted in 2022 than they were in like 1972. Mm. Our standards have changed, and it's not an FCC thing, by the way, either. They've warned or fined guys even for saying things that ended up in print, but that weren't even on camera, that weren't even recorded, that were just simply from a reporter getting an interview with a player, and the player cursed and the reporter printed it, which is another part of the problem here. We, the media, are feel far more free to print these words now than we used to, and that bothers the NBA also, because it means that these things are getting into print sometimes in full without the dashes or the asterisks. And
wait, Howard, are you gonna hear from Adam Silver over this, over your article?
Well, the funny thing, Maggie, is that if David Stern, may he rest in peace, among the best F-bomb tongue lashings I ever got was
of course,
David Stern, if he were still around, I guarantee you, tongue-in-cheek, he would have called and just unloaded with every version of the F word that you could imagine, because he deployed it to great effect. I have not heard from Adam today. I have not heard from anybody at the NBA today other than on a minor thing that they wanted to point out. But no one's cursed at me yet, aside from, I think, a scout and a couple of my friends in the media who were just having fun.
Howard, it was a great story. By the way, and I know you, how do you, you're on a podcast with Chris Mannix. You must have to curse at him all the time just for his dumb takes. I have an encyclopedic knowledge of Chris Mannix's bad takes. Wow. If you ever need them.
I mean, somebody's got to keep track of them. Yeah. That's a tough order. We can curse on our podcast.
Oh, you do? You guys curse?
I try not to abuse it, but I've been known to drop them here and there on occasion because, you know, Mannix brings that out of us.
I know.
Howard, it's been a real pleasure talking with you. This has just been super fun.
Yeah, Howard, thanks for your time. It's a great read on Sports Illustrated. We'll check in soon, buddy.
Thanks, folks. Appreciate it.
The one and only Howard. Beck.
That was great. I think we need a longer beep to so we get a more complex curse word in there. Wow. All right. Coming up, we have a major achievement in sports by a name I guarantee most people do not know. That's coming up next. Maggie and Perloff.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.